Chapter 2. Another most interesting day, though of a different nature. Today was spent witnessing the arrangements for dealing with the wounded. I spent the morning at an advanced dressing station on the south bank of the river. It was in a cellar, beneath the ruins of a house, about 400 yards from the front line, and under heavy shell fire, as close at H, and was the remains of what had been a wood, which was being used as a concentration point for reserves. The cover afforded by this so-called wood was extremely slight, and the troops were concentrating for the attacks and counterattacks which were taking place under shell fire. This caused the surgeon in charge of the cellar to describe the wood as our main supply station. I entered the cellar at 8 a.m., taking advantage of a partial lull in the shelling, but a machine gun bullet viciously flipped into a wooden beam at the entrance as I ducked to go in. I was not sorry to get underground. A sloping path brought me into the cellar, on one side of which sappers were digging away the earth to increase the accommodation. The illumination consisted of candles set in bottles, and some electric hand lamps. The center of the cellar was occupied by two portable operating tables, rarely untenanted during the 3 hours I spent in this hell. The atmosphere, for there was no ventilation, stank of sweat, blood, and chloroform. By a powerful effort, I countered my natural tendency to vomit, and looked around me. The sides of the cellar were lined with figures on stretchers. Some lay still and silent, others writhed and groaned. At intervals, one of the attendants would call the doctor's attention to one of the still forms. A hasty examination ensued, and the stretcher and its contents were removed. A few minutes later, the stretcher, empty, returned. The surgeon explained to me that there was no room for corpses in the cellar. Business, he genially remarked, was too brisk at the present crucial stage of the great battle. The first feelings of revulsion having been mastered, I determined to make the most of my opportunities, as I have always felt that the naval officer is at a great disadvantage in war. Compared with his military brother, he rarely has a chance of accustoming himself to the unpleasant spectacle of torn flesh and bones. This morning there was no lack of material, and many of the intestinal wounds were revolting, so that at lunchtime, when another convenient lull in the torrent of shell fire enabled me to leave the cellar, I felt hardened. I had assisted in a humble degree at one or two operations. I had lunch at the 11th Army Medical Headquarters mess. It was a sumptuous meal. After lunch, while waiting to be motored to a field hospital, I happened to see a battalion of Silesian troops about to go up to the front line. It was rather curious feeling that one was looking at men, each in himself a unit of civilization, and yet many of whom were about to die. Their faces were an interesting study. Some looked careless and debonair, and swung past with a touch of recklessness in their stride. Others were grave and serious, and plodded forward to the dictates of an inevitable fatalism. The field hospital, where we met some charming nurses, on one of whom I created an impression, was not particularly interesting. It was clean, well organized, and radiated the efficiency inseparable from the German army. Back at Wilhelmshaven, curse it! Yesterday morning, when about to start on a tour of the ammunition supply arrangements, I received an urgent wire recalling me. I was lucky enough to get a passage as far as Mons in an Albatross scout, which was taking dispatches to that place. From there, I managed to bluff a motor car out of the town commandant. This took me to Aachen, where I got an express. Witneisser went sick, and Arnheim being away, this has left only two in the operations ciphering department. My arrival has made us three. It is pretty strenuous work, and, being of a clerical nature, suits me little. The only consolation is that many of the messages are interesting. I was looking through the back files the other day, and I came across the wireless report from the boat that had sunk the Lusitania. It has always been a mystery to me why we sank her, as I do not believe those things pay. Arnheim has come back, so I have got out of the ciphering department. I have received official information that my application for U-boats has been received. Meanwhile, all there is to do is to sit at this hole and wait. 2nd June, 1916. I have fought in the greatest sea battle of the ages. It has been a wonderful and terrible experience. The details of the battle will be history, but I feel that I must place on record my experiences. We have not escaped without marks, and the Koenig brought 67 dead and 125 wounded in Newport as the price of the victory of Skagerrak, but of the English. There are thousands who sleep their last sleep in the wrecked hulls of the battle cruisers, rusting upon the Jutland banks. Sad as our losses are, and the gallant Lutzow has sunk in sight of home, I am filled with pride. We have met that great armada, the British fleet, we have struck them with a hammer blow, and we have returned. I was asleep in my cabin when the news came that Tipper was coming south, with the British battle cruisers on his beam. In 5 minutes we were at our action stations. We made contact with Hipper at 5:30 p.m., and Beatty turned north with his cruisers and fast battleships and we pursued. Two of the great ships had been sunk by our battle cruisers, and we had hopes of destroying the remainder when at 6:55, the mist on the northern horizon was pierced by the formidable line of the British battle fleet. Jellicoe had arrived. Three battle cruisers became involved between the lines, and in an instant one was blown up, and another crawled west, sinking. Confronted with the concentrated force of Britain's battle fleet, we turned to east, and for 20 minutes our high seas fleet sustained the unequal contest. It was during this period that we were hit 17 times by heavy shell, though in the after torpedo control tower, I only realized one hit. A shell plunged into the after turret, blowing the roof off, and killing every member of the turret's crew. From my position, when the smoke and dust had blown away, I looked down into a mass of twisted machinery, among which I detected the charred remains of bodies. At about 7:40 we turned, under cover of our smoke screen, and steered southwest. Our position was not satisfactory, they were between us and Heligoland. At 11 p.m. we received a signal for divisions of battle fleets to steer independently for the Horn Reef swept channel. 10 minutes later, we underwent the first of five destroyer attacks. The British destroyers had located us, and pressed home the attack again and again. About 1:30 a.m. we rammed one, passing through her like a knife through a cheese. Those sinister craft, rushing madly to their destruction down the beam of our searchlights. It was an avenue of death for them, but they did not hesitate. The surrounding darkness vomited flotilla after flotilla of these cavalry. They struck us once, a torpedo right forward, which will keep us in dock for a month, but did no vital injury. When morning dawned, we were to the eastward of the British, and so we came home to Wilhelmshaven. We are to report at Kiel, and shall be 6 weeks upon the job. Diary of a U-boat commander.